bitch on the mix like.
Without further ado, welcome back to Organic Thoughts Podcast. I'm your host, Machi Provost, and then got Troy Rory with me today, co-host.
What's up, guys?
And special guest, Kendall Reyes. Kendall is, you know, one of the first Black coaches, as well as first Black educators to run the, or to be a state technical director in U.S. soccer. He's from Trinidad and Tobago, played and worked. He came from Trinidad and Tobago to come and work in the United States. He played for Francis Marion. Now, within this, kind of fast forward to 2020, you know, he's the owner and head coach of Sparta FC, which is in the UPSL. He's been a longstanding coach as well as, you know, a mentor around the game of soccer. He comes from the being a chair of the Black Soccer Coaches Advocacy Group, which is where I met him personally. But without further ado, you know, we don't want to take the floor from you. Kendall, welcome. Welcome. How are you today?
I'm well, guys. Thank you so much for having me on today. It's a pleasure always to join Young Brothers and just have a conversation with you guys, you know. So I appreciate the introduction. Thank you.
No problem, man. Yeah. So getting into it, man, what was your motivation to turn from player to coach and become a mentor? Because, you know, college students, typically when you go to college, like, you're just thinking, how can I get my degree to go make some money quick? But that wasn't your path, to say the least. So could you highlight your path for us and also give us, you know, the decision making behind why you chose to go from player to coach and mentor and educator?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to use your words. It was really organic for me, to be honest with you. My background in the game, I've been coaching since I was a teenager. In Trinidad and Tobago, my high school, one of the things we have set up is the older players coach the younger players. So if you have like JV and then you have varsity, if you play in varsity, you help coach the JV players, if that's a good analogy. So always had those leadership skills as a youngster and been in environments that allow those leadership skills to really be nurtured. And so when I came to university, I was a captain of the freshmen, so which is not typical, but I was a little bit older than some of the players, but I was mature, I was an experienced player, and those qualities just kind of shone through. I didn't really plan on coaching, to be honest with you. When I finished my undergrad, there's an opportunity. They were just starting the A-League, so there's an opportunity to play with the Charleston Battery that I kind of wavered with whether I should continue playing or not, and had a conversation with my head coach at the time, Tom Davidson at Francis Marion, and he told me, he said, hey, why don't you come back to school? We'll take care of grad school for you, and you can help me coach the college team. So that's where I really kind of made that decision or transition. And I had been coaching all through the summers. We do camps, you know, I've been to a lot of different places, different environments, really getting a lot of experience through the summer camp process. So that just kind of organically fell in, and, you know, my head coach brought me in. He was a baseball guy, and he respected what I brought to the table from, you know, a soccer standpoint and leadership standpoint. So he sort of gave me the reins, you know, he was there, but I ran a lot of the sessions. you know, and really just jump right in. Yeah.
That's what's up, man. What, I guess, what was your why during that point? Because that's something that I asked, or I ask a good amount of entrepreneurs, or, you know, a good amount of people who are, who, you know, they've done the preliminary stages of what they're going to do in their life. But like, what was your why or motivation factor behind, you know, picking that route?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, what really transpired was that my natural gifts were sort of unfolding, right? So I'm a teacher, I'm an educator, I did my master's in education, and I have this natural way that I engage with young people that can be motivating, inspiring, right? And so, and again, it really wasn't a game plan to say, this is what I'm going to do, or this is what I set out to do. As it unfolded, it just became a natural flow. So it became part of me understanding what my gifts were and the impact that I could have on other young people who were looking up to me. My teammates looked up to me as a big brother, you know. And so that was sort of a natural thing that was happening. And again, I really didn't formulate a why in my mind, but I understood very early the impact that I was having in order to influence other young people in a positive manner. So for me, that was good enough. It didn't have a philosophy behind it necessarily at that point in time.
That hits on like the genuinity and like authenticity, you know, that you have.
He said it himself, it's like an organic way, organic connection to things. So I see that a lot. Ms. Kendall, I had a, you know, question about the transition from, you know, Trinidad and like Tobago to now the US. Like, how was that? How was that for you and the experience, et cetera?
Yeah, well, you know, fortunately, I had several experiences of visiting the US before I actually came here to university. So my club team that I played for at the time, we would come over to play in tournaments and, you know, different events like that. So the US wasn't really new to me. I had been here several times. And then after we'd finish a tournament, I'd go visit family in New York and spend time with them. So it wasn't a major adjustment, although only having experience living in New York, I lived in Brooklyn, or, you know, visiting and being there, but then coming to the South, you know, having to make those adjustments, being a student again, was a little bit different, you know, coming into an environment where there were only a handful of Black players playing in the team. And, you know, so having to make those adjustments was a little bit different. Having the Black community on campus kind of look at you a little bit differently, you know, wait a minute, you know, because it's not traditional to see a lot of Black guys playing in the game, especially at the collegiate level at the time I was playing, you know, so those were just some of the adjustments there. But, you know, coming from my culture, man, we pretty cool. We get along with everybody. So, you know, it didn't take a whole lot. My major adjustment that I had to make was learning how to be a student athlete, you know, so managing my time and making sure I took care of my academics in the right way. Those were more or less the major adjustments I had to make. And then, of course, you know, financially, it's a challenge because, you know, everything's not paid for. So you got to learn how to live on your own and feed yourself and things like that. So, yeah, but not a major transition for me. I didn't feel like it was. Yeah.
Through those challenges, though, what do you think was the outcome that, you know, you attained or that you developed? What skill sets do you think that you developed from those challenges?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm gonna go to the word on you, you know. So the, for us, for the best to come out of us, sometimes we gotta be, we gotta deal with challenges. We gotta learn how to overcome certain things, right? But when we talk about character building, I think that's what we talk about, or I recognize coming out of those challenges where, you know, you develop a level of discipline, self-discipline. You learn how to manage your emotions, right? Emotional intelligence, because you can't let the frustration get to you too bad where you can make wrong choices. You know, you build this character in you in how you're going to deal with an obstacle. Are you going to run away? Are you going to hide? Are you going to face it? Are you going to try to knock down walls? Are you going to come up with solutions? And so to me, it was all part of the character building that came out of those challenges that that I encountered. You know, I'll be honest with you, some days, man, there's no food. You know, the place I lived in, sometimes we couldn't pay the lights, you know, keep the lights on. I studied under the street light, but you do what you gotta do when the challenges come. You do what you gotta do because you're goal oriented, you're focused, you're motivated, you know what you wanna get on the end, right? So obstacle is only an opportunity for you to bring out the best in you. And that's the way that I learned from it.
So let's fast forward a little bit from player to now young coach. It's your first season as a collegiate head coach. Take me back. What's the first sight that you saw that, you know, opened your eyes up to the different level? What's the smell? What's the cleats? You know, what's the practice jersey? You know, you put me in your shoes.
Man, look, I'll say this. I really had a good opportunity to have some mentors along the way. So while I was an assistant coach, a head coach at Francis Marion, Murray Hartzler, who's now the athletic director, I got a chance to learn some things from him, have my notebook, what to do and what not to do. And you always think about when I become the head coach, how much I'm going to do differently, right? So my first head coaching job, I was a women's coach at Newberry College. And that job in itself was a challenge, a program that hadn't seen very little success in the first 4 years of its existence. And when I got there, I asked the players, you know, what did they expect? And we had had so much success with Francis Marion Women's Program, which I was instrumental in getting that program off the ground. You know, they told me, hey, we want to be like Francis Marion. We saw what you guys did, you know? So I said, you sure? Because look, there's some things that hasn't happened here that we're going to have to deal with. And so coming in to implement the philosophy on how players approach the game, how they approach training, you know, the discipline, you know, having to get a commitment to go to study hall and their academics. Those are all the things that I brought to the table. But it wasn't a bed of roses. You know, my office was the storage closet for intramural equipment. You know, so I started to grind hard, but in taking over a program, it's a little bit different than having started a program. So in taking over a program, you gotta work towards implementing your own philosophy, your own approach to the game and how you manage players. And that was a little bit of a challenge because some of the players, you know, when it's new and it's different, you get some pushback. And I remember one of my better players, Kim out of Michigan, you know, kids showing up to practice when they want and, you know, whatever time. I don't know what went on before I was there, but those were some of the things that I wanted to make sure that we were going to change and create a proper culture for success, right? So I got a lot of pushback from her and other players. And interestingly enough, the athletic director and even the president, they were kind of trying to tell me, hey, you're trying to do too much too soon. And I say, hey, look, if I don't get these pieces right, we're going to be climbing this hill for a long time. So I want to get this part of it right. You know, what are my expectations? I expect you to show up to practice. I expect you to be on time. I expect you to put the work in. I expect you to go to class. I expect you to get good grades. And holding players accountable for those things was very, very important to me. And it took a little while. We got off and running. You know, we had some marginal success. We won more games than they'd ever won before in a season. And we had some players quit because, you know, again, the demands was a little bit different than they expected, but we lived with it and it was not bad. And it grew into something a little bit better the next year, you know? So the second year, added a couple more players, lost some and we added some. And by the second year, we were over 500 for the first time in the history of the program. Had some players make all conference, had a player make all region, freshman of the year. So we started getting some fruits of the labor as early as the second year. And then benefited me personally as a young coach because I had a great opportunity come to me right after that. I guess people saw the work I was doing, and University of South Carolina Upstate, used to be Spartanburg, they were starting a women's program, and they brought me in to get that program off the ground. So that was the beginning of my journey. Yeah,
it's early to see that early on. You had those kind of like not challenges, but like yeah, challenges. You have the people telling you that, oh, you're moving too fast a little bit too soon. But then clearly a year later, the results show that, all right, those decisions made coming in like that was actually the best decision for this entire program. So you stuck through that. Now, I had a question. What was it like being the first, you know, Black, you know, kind of like technical director, and like in that position, did you feel a certain weight on you that you had to like, you know, deliver the best? Or like, what was it like at that point and just being in that aspect of things?
I didn't necessarily feel a weight to carry. In fact, I was really honored to be in that role, but you gotta have to understand my journey. So again, when we do this, it takes a village, right? So we have people who were supportive in my development as a coach. You know, my close friend and mentor, Sam Okpodu, who was already a staff coach with United Soccer Coaches at the time and NSCAA. And through that affiliation helped open some doors for me to be connected with some people, but they could see me and evaluate me on my own merit and the quality of the work, the quality of the person who I was, you know, the kind of character that I had. I had done the work, so it really wasn't a token appointment. There are a couple of courses that were hosted in South Carolina, and I was invited to come along and be an assistant, so to speak. And I remember working with Peter Broadley, who was one of the senior staff instructors. We did a course down in Sumter. And through that weekend, when I was done, Peter, he shook my hand. He said, man, you got some good stuff, man. I could see you going really far as a coach educator, you know? So he just patted me on the back, said, hey, just keep it up. So when that opportunity came, there were a number of people recommended, and I was selected for it. You know, again, I felt like throughout my development, I've been doing good work, and people have been recognizing my work. And this was just one of the indicators that I had already done good enough work for somebody or for an organization to say, hey, you know what? It's not just that he's the first Black one. That just happened to be, hey, comes with the territory, but that I was qualified out, that I had the qualities they were looking for to fit that role. I just happened to be a Black coach, or should I say a Black coach who was excellent at what I was doing.
That's when the eyes start getting on you. If you'd like, could you go into some of the, well, before we get there, actually, let's talk about you being the chair of the Black Soccer Coaches, you know, because that's a huge network in which, you know, is underrepresented and honestly under talked about, because, or under discussed rather. You know, I remember the, we met Kadani out in LA, right?
Yeah.
Kadani knows Kendall, and Kadani was telling me, hey man, you need to get into Black Soccer Coaches GroupMe. Right. Like if you're not in there, you're missing out. Right. And you know, a couple of weeks went by and I was like, all right, let's check it out. And when I got in there, you know, people are posting almost daily about different opportunities that's there. And then also it's just like a cool way to network without having to drive to Chicago, having to drive to, you know, LA, having to, but you can meet a lot of good people who are willing to help you grow. So could you talk about, you know, how you found that organization, how you became the chair of the Black Soccer Coaches of America?
Sure, yes. Yeah. So while I was an assistant at Francis Marion, the head coach encouraged me to go take a course, right? Because obviously you want to start getting your coaching education credentials under your belt. So he was encouraging me to go. And in the same breath, I mentioned Sam Marcota, who's also a staff member at the time, but he's been a good friend of mine. We met way back in the 90s when I was doing camps at Duke University, and he'd been a good friend of mine for a long time. So when I registered for my first course, the national course, Sam decided that since I was going to the course and he would be an instructor on the course, that we ride together. So we have these incredible trips that we've been on, and man, we write books in the conversation, deep philosophical thoughts. So when he picked me up, he drove down from Virginia, picked me up, and then we drove from South Carolina to Fort Lauderdale, to where the course was. What was really, really unique for me is at that time, the instructional staff came into the environment, into the course environment, two or three days prior to the course starting. And what they would do staff training. So they would, each of them who had their assignments for the sessions they would be running for each level, they would do these sessions, you know. So they would run their session and then sort of do peer evaluations, right? So I was there just observing, and then the director at the time, Jeff Tippin, he said, come on, man, come and play. You're a young guy. We could use an extra body out here. So I jumped in the session and I watched and I helped pick up cones and pick up equipment. But it was such a unique environment to have all these coach educators and to listen to them talk about the game, how they were examining the game. It was really exciting for me. Craig Brown from Scotland, and there was, it was just a unique environment that I had a privilege to get exposed to. And so after I finished the course, was that first convention, I believe in Baltimore. So I went to the convention in Baltimore, and at the convention, you start getting introduced to this one, that one, the next one. And I know you guys don't know Sam Marcota, but Sam's like a legend, NC State, and you know, a really unique individual in the coaching realm. But obviously getting to meet a lot of the handful of Black coaches who were either coaching at, you know, at some level, whether it be Division I or Division II or NAIA. But at the time, there's a handful of guys, and this organization was already in existence. The Black Coaches, Black Soccer Coaches Committee is what it used to be called. NSCA at the time was just really trying to diversify or address diversity within the organization. And so that's how I first got involved. It was founded by Lincoln Phillips, another legendary coach, Howard University national championship coach, and him and some other incredible Black men in the game, Coach Brahani, who's worked at Stanford and a lot of different places. These are coaches that people didn't even really know existed, or Black coaches that were doing some phenomenal things already, but only a handful. And so that's how I became involved, just as a member on the outside looking in. And I remember, fast forward to 2000, so this was late 98, yeah. And so by 2003, the convention was in Charlotte. And I remember going to one of the meetings. It was a massive meeting. And that's when I got involved. So I didn't want to be a participant anymore. I wanted to be involved in a way that I could bring some of my own qualities and leadership skills to the table to help this organization advance the cause of Black coaches, to be advocates, to work towards supporting each other, helping create opportunities, helping to open doors and be mentors, among other things, for the growing community of Black coaches that were coming along. I remember like going on recruiting trips as a college coach, and there'd be four or five of us on a major tournament, you know, and then there's some other young guys who would be coaching clubs, and they'll literally come to you and say, man, hey, you know, I'm so glad to see you guys coaching college. What does it take to become a college coach? So we weren't only just doing for ourselves, but we were doing for that next generation of young Black coaches to come along. So that has been the mission. That has been the goal. I ended up serving on a leadership committee starting in 2004. I think Hilton Days at the time was the president, or the chair of our group. And then when Hilton stepped down, Sam Apodu took over and I became his vice chair. He served two terms. I was vice chair for two terms. Daniel Gordon came after Sam, and I worked sort of within the leadership team for Daniel. And then when Daniel's term ended is when I became the chair in 2017. So so that was my journey into the Black soccer coaches chair position. But I spent, again, you have to remember that along the way, there's work to be done. And I was always doing the work. I was always one of those people willing to do the work. And so, you know, it just progressed into that space where I became the chair in 2017.
Yeah. That was one more thing. I know we got like 10 minutes left for Skendel, but I wanted to ask, like, throughout the journey, what was your biggest challenge? Either, you know, getting to that point, or, you know, assuming the position and then still delivering to this day. Like, what's your biggest journey in all of that? I mean, your biggest challenge that you had to face, if you had any, in all of that?
Of course, yes. So, you know, there's stereotypes that you always gotta be battling against, right? And those are societal stereotypes in terms of, you know, leadership. How other entities view Black leadership is sort of minimized. And it's easy to find fault with what we do, right? But whether we're good enough, you know, you really have to fight to show people that you are good enough. So stereotypes in terms of the perception that we lack leadership skills, or we lack the ability to organize or to plan and to execute. So there's this notion that, yeah, we could get together and have a good time, but can you guys actually build out a plan and execute some things, right? That helps move not only your group forward, but members of your group, but as the association as a whole. So remember, we're only part of a bigger entity. And so our contributions have to also be able to impact the entity as a whole, right? So when I came on board, I understood from all my experiences, what were those perceptions of us as a group, what we had done or not done, accomplished, not accomplished, talked about, never materialized. And I wanted to, I wanted to be that guy who says, hey, you know what? During the time I was here, what did I leave in place? What did I leave behind? What did I do that was significant enough for this group and this organization of Black coaches? And so I built a team. I inherited a team and, you know, did some work in reshuffling and bringing people in who I thought were like-minded and like-spirited. And then I put a challenge to the group. I told them, hey, look, my first year, I said, here's about five different things we talked about that we want to see accomplished. We might not get all five done. And let me go back. I'll tell you, honestly, I made some phone calls to some other people who had served in the organization in leadership roles. And I asked questions. I asked them, hey, what do you guys think would be viable for us to do as a group that can really start to help change the perception of who we are? And I got feedback, I got input from other entities. And so I took that, added it to what my vision for the group was, formulated a game plan. And so we came in with these projects. We had five projects we laid out. One was going to be a mentorship program. One was going to be a college recruiting process, so how we could network to help our young Black players come through the system and get better opportunities. We talked about doing a tournament. There's like five things we laid out, and we got two of them accomplished, two of them that the association was really excited to support. So I understood that I was on the right track. And then that next year was really about building, that first year or two was building some bridges. I wanted to make sure that other entities were comfortable enough to engage with us candidly and openly, not have backdoor conversations, and say one thing in our face, but say something else somewhere else. I wanted to be open and candid with them. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. I talked to the women's group. The women's group had done quite a bit, and I went to a couple of people there and I said, hey, we got some of the same issues that you guys have. How did you guys deal with this? So I was building bridges. I was trying to open doors. I wanted to make some connections that would be valuable and lasting across the association. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And then mentoring some younger coaches, having conversations with the Kadanis and the Nicole Hercules and other young coaches who were also working hard, trying to find their way. And in my third year, I transitioned, and that was a transitional year of, okay, so where are we going to go? So I got the experience of a Mike Curry who had served in the board before. I got, some other people with some experience, and I sat with them and I said, hey, if we're going to really make this thing work, we need a strategic plan. We need to formulate something that's going to last us for a period that people could jump on board, support, and go with. So I spoke with the CEO, Lynn Berlin-Manuel. I brought the idea to her. Rob Smith, another experienced guy. I sat with those guys and say, when I end my term, I want to leave something in place. So we brainstormed, we had a big meeting at a convention in Chicago, and we did a SWOT analysis for Black coaches. We did one, we created a strategic plan with five strategic areas we were gonna focus on. And then we put in place opportunities to get some leaders for each of those groups, and each leaders would have people who support them. So I moved from having this chair and a team to building a team of leaders. So our system was designed to, our strategic plan was designed to not just have one person sit in the chair seat, but to have 20 strong people coming and saying, we've got to get this done, we've got to get that done, we've got to get that, and then strategically approaching how we would do it. And then to highlight it all, having an incredible young star like Nicole Hercules to be my understudy. And then when I was asked, so who do you have in mind to to take the reins when you leave. And I said, Nicole Hercules. And they looked at me and said, wow, she's really sharp. But I was already sort of presenting her to people. And then she would become the first Black woman to be a chair of the organization of our group. And she's done a phenomenal job just carrying this thing forward now. And she's got a great team. The strategic plan is being well executed. And if you guys have followed the last 2-3 years, you know, you would see how much has been done and how much mileage and exposure Black coaches have now been able to receive and things they're accomplishing. I was able to establish an award of excellence for Black coaches that has been adopted by the association. So all the advocacy groups now use that excellency award within each of the advocacy groups. And so there's a lot of work that was done in that window, but a lot of fruitful work that now when I sit in an advisory position, I just watch Nicole run her thing, man. Kadani and those guys, they're doing incredible work. And I'm just excited to see how this thing continues to unfold.
Hey, I'm gonna call you right back. It's about to close out on us.
Okay, no problem.
All right, so you just broke down to us, you know, kind of not the whole complete lifespan of, you know, Black Soccer Coaches Association organization, but, you know, your tenure there, the challenges you faced, and as well as the strategies you put together that, you know, your mentee learned, and now she's running the ship successfully as well. Now, let's get into kind of like intellectual property, because I know that is kind of a key area within, you know, the Black community that gets overlooked, because our intellectual property is what creates dollars for us. And also it creates opportunities for us. And when we don't get the credit that we need, that's when we start seeing those inequities, inequalities, and also inadequacies in proper, like giving somebody their flowers or giving somebody their respect or their respect, due credit, you know? So have you went through any scenarios to where your intellectual property was not fully contributed towards, you know, what you brought to a certain organization or a certain time frame or position, and, you know, to this day, it is possibly still being used?
Yeah, I can pinpoint a couple of things, but to be honest with you, what it really comes down to ownership, right? So even when we take a look at the Black Soccer Coaches Advocacy Group, we're still a part of a larger organization. So if I went to instruct a coaching course, right, and the sessions that I create to do are my intellectual property, but because I work under the umbrella of an organization, that is technically it's not mine. So if I did a session at a convention or whatever, and those things are recorded, those are not mine, but because I'm a part of the association, it belongs to the association. So technically that's what it is, but it comes down to ownership, right? And I think that's one of the things when you look at the whole concept of Sparta 2020 and UPSL, and what my partner Andy and I thought about when we started doing this thing was, how do we get our people to understand why it's important to own stuff? Because when you own it, you own it. If you stay under an umbrella, which is okay, you don't get to own the stuff. And ownership's really important. You know what I mean? So I remember a buddy of mine called me. He was at a course. I won't say where and when. And there's part of it was the leadership thing that they were doing. And he recognized something that I had done for him and his club. But I also presented it in another environment. And then it was it was adopted and being used in that environment, you know. So, you know, he said he was kind of giggling a little bit. I want to try to be nice about it. And they asked him, so what are you giggling about? He says, well, I've seen this stuff before. And they said, where have you seen this before? And he said, well, my good friend's done this. This is his stuff, you know, because I was there when he created it, you know. And they were like, oh, really? And that was the end of that conversation. It wasn't who's your friend or, you know, whatever. I mean, that was the end of it. So those things happen as long as you don't have ownership or you learn how to take ownership, those things can potentially happen. So take ownership, copyright, trademark, anything that you have that you're producing, we need to be able to do that. We need to understand how to do that. That's the only way you can protect your intellectual property.
All right, man. And to kind of cap it off, Ben, what would be some advice that you'd give to first student athletes, second to a young upcoming aspiring collegiate coach, and third to anybody looking to move into the professional realm of either their careers, their business, or into the professional soccer realm?
Do the work. That none of this, you can't get it done without doing the work, but do good work. People recognize good work. So do the work. For the student athlete, that means, you know, develop the discipline to be a good student, okay? Do what you gotta do. Spend hours in the library, use the resources available at the institution, do all those things that you need to do from an academic standpoint, do quality work. And then as an athlete yourself, you still have to do quality work, right? Whether it's gym work, off-season training, proper nutrition, rest, rehabilitation, all the things that would allow you to execute your craft, spend extra time training, working on your weaknesses, polishing your strengths. It's all work. You've got to work. So, but doing quality work and having the discipline to do quality work is really important for the student athlete. For the young coach, coaching is a journey, okay? And you have to learn your craft. Study other people, spend time with other people, find a mentor who has experience in the game that it can share with you. You know, explore ideas in the game. Don't be afraid to fail, okay? But you also have to do the work. Soccer is not an easy game. Coaching is not an easy business. It requires a lot of time and a lot of energy, long hours of studying and thinking and probing and searching. And it's a science all by itself to me. But if you're passionate about it, it doesn't feel like that at all, okay? I can watch video and games and film for hours without even thinking twice about it or being a coaching session. Funny story really quickly. So my neighbor has two young boys across the street from me. They've been wanting to come and train, right? So they came over on Monday for the first time, and I was out there with no shoes. You know, I went back to my childhood development days and we're just working on the technical part of the game. And they asked me, so why are you not wearing your cleats? I said, well, when I grew up, we didn't always have cleats. Sometimes we played with no shoes in the streets. I said, but you get a better feel for the ball, better touch on the ball. And they had a blast. But you know what my wife said? My wife said to me, you had more fun than those kids. So that passion, you know, you have to have that passion. That's the thing that drives you. It doesn't feel like work. As a young coach, you have to have the passion that drives you to learning your craft. And I would say the same thing as a business person now. Remember, everything that we're doing, someone else is trying to do it better than you. So you have to put the time in, you have to do the work, you have to put the extra energy in. And I would say this, that I've learned the last couple of years, don't be afraid to fail. don't let failure or the potential to fail hinder you from doing. Okay, I know personally how that has impeded me in a lot of ways in my life over the years, even as a player sometimes. Building, the more work you do, the more confidence you have, but you can't let failure be a reason why you didn't try. I have some stickies on my board, some memory, some things that remind myself, right? So the fear of failure is a terrible reason not to try. So I remind myself of that, okay? And you're gonna lose some, you're gonna win some and you lose some. Losing is learning. Losing is learning. What did I learn? Every day is an opportunity for you to learn something, an opportunity for you to improve, an opportunity for you to get better at what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. So those would be my key tidbits going forward.
Yeah, man. Yes, sir. Well, hey, man, y'all have gotten some gems from Kendall. Kendall, thank you for coming on, blessing us with all your experience. And also, guys, Troy and I are executives with Kendall with Tie-Dye Nation. It's a brand that we're building, and it will be a domestic as well as international brand. So stay tuned for more information on that. And then, Kendall, did you have any announcements or any social media or web pages you want to plug?
Well, Tie-Dye Nation, of course, you know, we're doing some great work with Tie-Dye Nation, with our apparel brand and all the other spin-offs that we do with tie-dye. I am doing some personal work in the financial industry. One of the things I'm finding out for our community is that a lot of us are not aware of how the financial industry works. So I'm doing some specific work related to retirement planning, estate planning, how to take care of our families using life insurance as assets rather than waiting for somebody to die, how you could help protect your family now, how to do tax-free retirement, anything in the financial industry, go find out what's happening with your 401k. There's a lot of things that are happening in the financial industry that as a community, we need to make sure that we're aware of, that we're organizing and taking care of our families as best as we can. Okay. And in closing, man, put God first. You got a plan for your life. Don't worry about the obstacles. He can see you through it. Put God first.
It's been a pleasure, Mr. Kendall. Like always, whenever we talk, I feel personally that I just listen and absorb information, really. And we got the financial literacy organization going on as well. You're my mentor in that aspect too, so I'm kind of glad we have this connection going. And I feel like we could have talked for like a longer time, but we didn't have like the
not today.
But hopefully we get you on again, and then we talk maybe like some of our other projects and different things. So this was really fun.
Sure. All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. It was my pleasure. And look, man, I enjoy any opportunity to give back to my community and the young entrepreneurs who are aspiring to make their way in this world. You know, that's part of my charge I have, is to give back. And so I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys. And anytime, I'm a phone call away, man. Just give me a call and I'll be ready to hop on again. All right. Be blessed.
My last question, sorry. Controversial. Messi or Ronaldo?
Last one.
I want to hear this. Steve, you're a soccer person. You shouldn't even be asking that question. But hey. I read the Forbes release, the highest paid athletes, and Messi is even beating Ronaldo there too. That's all I got to say.
Let's go. Oh, that's interesting. I personally see Ronaldo as, you know, my all-time, at least this generation between Messi and Ronaldo. I see Ronaldo, and he's a hard worker. Like,
right. He's not working hard enough.
He's not working hard enough.
He's got 4 years on the bench. Respect to both sides.
Hey, you know what? Hey, both of them have done their thing, man. You know, and some people are gonna like some, and some other people not gonna like none. I just kind of brought a real dividing line for you. See what I'm saying? So you want to count goals and matches won and all of this, blah, 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 blah. I just went to Forbes. Forbes will tell you who the real deal is.
So he's going on Forbes.
Right. Before I let Forbes settle it. That's it. You know,
let's give Ronaldo another year. Maybe his cologne line might sell. So
you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So, hey, but look, Messi might still roll with them new NFT game plan he got going on. So pay attention. Yeah.
Yeah. He hasn't even touched his American money yet. So once he comes to the States, it's gonna be different. Very different.
I'm telling you.
No, but thank you.
I'm excited to see them in the World Cup, and we'll see what they can still produce at this point in time. Of course, they're individuals. This is a team sport, so I don't get too hung up on the individual. And you know, being a college coach, especially, man, you gotta have a good team. You can't have one player that can do it. You gotta have a good supporting cast to make it happen. See what I'm saying? So we'll see what they could produce in the World Cup with their teammates. Yeah.
Yes, sir. And that is Kendall Reyes, guys, the GOAT, one of the GOATs, and our business partner, mentor, and friend. Thank you again, Kendall.
All right. Bless. Take care, guys.
No problem.
Match on the mix like... Mix like...